From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Well, our connection for this hour was made just yesterday when Governor Andrew Cuomo released his spending plan, his budget, for 2017 into 2018. It's been an unusual process, to say the least, regarding the state of the state and budget releases, but here we are, and there is plenty to discuss. For starters, will the legislature embrace Governor Cuomo's free college tuition plan? It's a plan that looks a lot like Hillary Clinton's plan from the presidential campaign. How much would it cost, and are there holes in that plan? Then there's economic development from the Buffalo Billion and Startup New York to aid in various forms. We'll discuss that, and we'll ask you this hour, what's on your mind? What state issues do you want to discuss? My guest is the minority leader of the New York State Assembly, Brian Kolb. He's here, and you should know we've also invited his counterpart, Assembly Majority Leader Joe Morelli as well. We are going to work out a date to have Assemblyman Morelli on the program soon. Assemblyman Morelli and Assemblyman Kolb, they have both been generous with their time for years. Two of the most accessible leaders in state government that I can say. So it's nice to have you back here, Brian. Thanks
always,
for being here.
Always a pleasure, Evan. Happy New Year to you and all your listeners.
You got it. And you agree? It's sort of unusual with the rollout of the state of the state and the budget. I haven't seen it kind of like this. How do you feel about it?
Well, it's unusual, but I also think it's a disservice to the 19-plus million New Yorkers.
Why?
Predominantly because the governor's tailoring his messages to different parts of the state rather than having one message for the state. He's not communicating directly with the not only the state legislature, but the judiciary, the state comptroller, and the state attorney general. We are all part of state government. You know, this is not a dictatorship. It's a joint co-equal branches of government, and we have an equal stake and equal responsibility in discussing these issues, whether it's the budget, whether it's other public policies. And the governor is using this, I think, more as a political platform so he can control the message, control the audience. People are invited to these presentations, people that are friendly to the governor, so they control the applause lines. No one's going to challenge what he says either before or after. And that's why I think it's not very transparent. And I just think it's a disservice to all of us that are interested in state government.
Do you think there is dysfunction at that level then, that this is a governor who's got, obviously he's got a bad relationship with Mayor de Blasio in New York City. That's been well documented. But what you're also describing is a lack of communication and perhaps a lack of respect among state leaders. Is this dysfunctional?
Well, I don't know if it's dysfunctional. I definitely think it's not workable, and I don't think that that's the type of government, the democracy that we're supposed to have. I do believe it's disrespectful. We are all elected officials. I represent 129,000 people. We have 150 assembly members with the same population per district. We have 63 state senators that represent approximately 300,000 people each. Each of our districts have unique needs, unique voices. My district is different than a district in Long Island or the North Country or the Southern Tier. And our voices want to be heard as well, and I want to communicate back to the constituents that I represent as well as all the other legislators as to our views as to the governor's budget plan and other public policies he may be, you know, speaking out on or advocating for.
We're talking to Brian Kolb, who is the minority leader in the New York State Assembly, and you can call the program toll-free, 844-295-TALK. It's 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're calling from Rochester, 263-9994. What's on your mind? What do you think about what the governor is putting forward? One of the bigger headlines, and this comes from the Buffalo News and Tom Precious's story last night, Cuomo's free tuition plan needs changes, lawmakers say. We'll see if Brian agrees with this. Let me just read from Tom's piece here. Quote, state lawmakers spent hours Tuesday seeking and not getting many of the answers that they have sought over an increasingly controversial plan by Governor Andrew Cuomo to provide free tuition to some public college students. In the morning, it was Nancy Zimfer, chancellor of the State University of New York, who was unable to answer questions about the $163 million Excelsior scholarship program that Cuomo proposed last week in his 2017 state budget. Zimfer told one lawmaker, quote, we should be able to answer that for you, and by golly, we will, end quote. Well, I don't know when, but we'll get the answer. What do you think, Brian?
Well, the announcement about the free tuition plan was a press release. It was a political statement. He did a presentation with former presidential candidate Bernie Sanders, and that was one of his key facets of his presidential platform. I think there's no secret that now people are believing that Governor Cuomo has got more eyes on 2020 in terms of running for a presidential
campaign. Do you think so?
I do.
You do?
I do. And I think a lot of this is a build-up to that. And also, in many of these cases, the governor's controlling the message. Even on the estimate of $163 million, our folks that have looked at this believe if this fully was implemented, you're dealing with $1 billion and not $163 million.
Why a billion? Why would there be that big of a gap between what the governor's putting out there versus what you think the reality may be?
Well, the governor's numbers were there's over 900,000 families, potential, what I'll call qualified applicants, or let's say applicants for this
program. But they're not all going to use it.
They're not going to use that, so cut that in half. Okay, the average cost of tuition between a community college and a four-year institution is about $5,000 a year. Well, you can do the math, $5,000 times 250,000 people. It doesn't add up to $163 million. It adds up to a billion. So you cut his numbers down. This is the legislature's numbers, and the average cost of tuition I'm talking about is factual because you can get that anywhere. That's why that number is not accurate, and I think this is a segue. It's really not that expensive to have a free tuition program.
250,000 times 5,000. Producer Megan Mack loves math. So but Brian is telling me it's 250,000 times 5,000 is around a billion or more.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit more about this plan. And I say quote unquote plan. Listeners, if this is the kind of thing that you think sounds good, I'm not meaning to malign it, but I think what Brian is pointing out is a couple of things. Number one, the evolution of this idea did start, at least most recently, with Bernie Sanders' presidential campaign. Hillary Clinton defeated him. There was a lot of pressure on her to at least kind of move left and adopt some of what Senator Sanders wanted. She did some of that. Her free tuition plan was very similar to his. And when we broke it down with the numbers, when we talked to economists, whether it's people like Kent Gardner in Rochester or we talked to people in the higher ed community, there were a lot of questions about how you would pay for it. Now, Senator Sanders wanted to pay for it with a tax on Wall Street speculation. And there wasn't a whole lot of belief that on the national level that was a big enough fundraiser to do that. When it comes to New York State, Brian, whether it's $163 million or a billion, what's your understanding for how this would be paid for?
Well, certainly by the general revenue stream, which is taxes. It could be income taxes. It could be corporate taxes. Certainly nothing is free. So the taxpayers, whoever's writing the check for taxes every year, are the ones that are going to be writing the check for this free tuition program. And that's not even getting into the discussion about why should we providing free tuition. We should have tuition assistance program. Maybe there's tax credits. There's a different way to approach the high cost of a college education. But the whole focus and the governor saying, well, if you don't have a college education, you have no future, which is not true. Certainly, we have a lot of skilled trades opportunities throughout our state. People that work in the skilled trades, whether you're a plumber, an electrician, a home builder, you can make a very good living. But, you know, obviously you have to develop the skilled trade to be able to work in that environment. And plenty of opportunities there that the governor's not even talking about. And also when you just looking at spending a sum of money, we have school districts, primary and secondary school districts in this state, high needs, low wealth, that are inadequately funded to just provide the basic education to our children before they even get through K-12. And so I believe that the governor's priority in this idea, there's a lot of other programs that need our attention before we start thinking about giving another way giveaway.
All right. And let's also talk a little bit about what the impact could be on private colleges. We had a conversation with Don Braveman, the president of Nazareth College, not long ago. In fact, he was on the program responding to Hillary Clinton's plan during the campaign at the time. One of his concerns is that if you pass something like this, you would see, inevitably, an increase in the number of students who want to go to public schools. Is there the capacity for that? Is there the infrastructure for that in place? Probably not right away. And then what does the corresponding drop in enrollment in private schools do? You think about St. Bonaventure in Olean. Or you think about Alfred. You think about schools that are in rural areas where they're maybe the largest employer, one of the largest employers. Could they handle a dramatic decline in enrollment and potential revenue, and what would it mean to those communities? Are those valid concerns?
They're absolutely valid concerns, and you know, that's why there's many criticisms and skepticism, Evan, about this particular program. And that's why we believe it's not workable. I don't think it's a good idea. I think that the governor's using this as sort of a populist message, you know. But having said that, I can't tell you a number of emails and letters I've received from people that are just going crazy about this proposal, saying, this is a bad idea. What are you talking about?
Surely you've heard from people who say they want to see this.
Not one.
Come on.
I'm serious. I read every letter, every email that is sent to me, and not one letter or email so far that says I'm in favor of this program.
We've been talking a lot about bubbles, Assembly Leader Kolb. Come on. There has to be somebody in your district.
Well, I'm not saying that there aren't people out there. You asked me, has anybody
written? So your feedback has been very negative.
Negative.
Okay. Okay. Because I think Senator Sanders, when he introduced the proposal, it was pretty popular on the campaign trail, pretty popular in Democratic circles, and pretty popular among people who see, you know, without getting granular on the details and how it's done, they look at Europe, they look at Scandinavia, they look at opportunities for free higher ed, and they think that is a good thing. And when you talk about tuition assistance, they may think, well, there is tuition assistance, but that's not enough. Student debt is huge in this country, and we need something that is workable. Now, maybe the governor's plan as presented isn't workable, but is there something else that's out there? You don't think free public tuition is a good idea at all?
I do not. And okay. I will tell you this. You know, you have to. I'm a parent. All three of my kids went to college. I helped them. They took out student loans. But part of their student loan was buy-in, that they've got a responsibility and accountability factor to their own selves, that if they're borrowing the money, they're going to make sure they stay in school and finish their college education, versus somebody along the way gives them this free ride, free check, then they don't really care if they succeed or fail in college. Somebody else is writing the check. I think there's a lack of, you know, when I first went to college, it was at Community College of Finger Lakes. My parents did not have any money. So I had to go out, work a part-time job, raise enough money, borrow money, tuition, to be able to go to school. If you didn't have the money, you don't go to school. So you go work until you can save up some money to afford to go to school. And I can't tell you a number of stories from parents that say that are paying a full shot for their kids that are going into their sixth, seventh year of college without graduating yet. I mean, it's fraught with potholes that can't be covered up by pavement, and I think that's why it's not a great idea.
Do you think the legislature has the appetite to pass it right now?
I don't think so.
You really don't?
I don't.
Okay. So we shall see there. And I know Michelle in Rochester wants to jump. Before we turn to other topics, because there's plenty to discuss with Brian Kolb, the minority leader of the New York State Assembly, Michelle wants to jump in on that. Go ahead, Michelle.
I just had a comment about your the point you raised about private institutions and what the impact of lower-cost public education might have on them. Mm-hmm. I guess just observing that my own alma mater sank a lot of money into capital investment for upgrading all sorts of campus buildings, and just how did we get to this place where college tuition is so high, especially private college tuition is so high in the first place? If there was this competition from the private sector, wouldn't the result of that not be declining enrollment, but a downward pressure on those massively escalating tuition?
You know, it's hard to say, really. I think that if you're really looking at what's the whole purpose of the quote-unquote free tuition program, it's trying to help folks that at a certain income level that can't afford or have a difficult time affording college education. There are different ways to approach that rather than just the taxpayers writing a check, and I think that's really what it gets down to. We're, if not the top, second highest taxed state in the nation, state and local taxes combined. This is would be another revenue that's used from the taxpayer, and we believe that there's other more important uses of this. And, you know, college education has been around for a long, long time, private universities, public universities. I think our public university here in New York State The community colleges and four-year institutions are they're way more affordable right now than private colleges. But I don't believe we should be subsidizing private colleges, as well as I think that the state has an obligation to make a state education possible, but not free.
Michelle, you want to follow up there?
I just see it in this broader picture of inequity and kind of escalating inequity. And as the private college tuitions go up and up and up to try to, because of the investments that they're making to try to recruit the top dollar candidates, it's just created a bigger gulf. And so part of the engineering of the solution should be holding the private institutions accountable for creating this gulf in the first place.
Michelle, thanks. Brian, who do you think is to blame for the student debt crisis?
I never like to use the word blame. I think it's more along the lines of, what do you think is going on?
Yep.
Certainly college is very expensive. Having said that, there's not everybody can afford to go to college. That doesn't mean that they can't go to college, but you provide different mechanisms for people with lower incomes to have an affordability, and that's what our state education system does. Community colleges are a great jumpstart. Finger Lakes Community College, Monroe Community College, Genesee Community College, Erie Community College in our state. We have a very, very good public educational system that is not as expensive as private colleges, and that's a great opportunity for higher education. So what other things can we do to help students that do not have the means to fulfill their academic possibilities? And there's multiple approaches rather than just say, we're going to write you a check from the state taxpayers.
By the way, the Buffalo News, their story on this subject quotes Nancy Zimpher, President Assouni, putting an initial number of 80,000 students who will qualify, a far smaller number. And again, I don't know, Brian, where that comes from directly. Part of the problem is, as the Buffalo News points out, there were plenty of questions that they could not answer yesterday. But why would she say 80,000 and you think the number could be much higher for those who qualify?
Well, I think, first of all, she does a great job as the chancellor. She has done a wonderful job. But also, Assouni is controlled by the governor. And the governor has his people out there that are going to say things that are going to make it sound less expensive than the reality. I think that's a tradition that the governor follows. And as you could tell, because there are no details out there, there's no bill print from the governor. It says these are the aspects. This is how you're going to qualify. How are you going to how do you hold a student accountable for staying in school? Is there a limit? There's all sorts of details, and people might feel better or worse about the program if there are a lot more details, and obviously they're not out there.
Okay, Rick in Bath, next up. Go ahead, Rick.
Yeah, I agree with what he's saying on the school. Back in the 70s, they had a training program, and they sent I lived around Penny in there, and they sent a lot of people to Finger Lakes, and they were going for just anything, and almost just something to do. And the biggest thing I'm going to call about is it's very obvious that this governor is going to run for president, and he's taking my tax dollars and he's buying votes with it. So I want somebody to tell him to knock it off.
Rick, thanks for the phone call. I suspect Brian may attempt to do that.
Or have already, not only on this program, but a variety of other programs, when we're looking at the spending of $152 billion, and that's what the governor's proposing for 2017-2018.
And before we get to, there's so much more to talk about beyond the tuition proposal, but a lot of people wanted to jump in on that. So there's Rick in Bath, Chris in Geneva as well. Go ahead, Chris.
I was calling to make two points. The first is that what we spend federally on college for state institutions is $60 billion a year. What the federal government appropriates towards colleges for financial aid, grants, all of that is $77 billion a year. So just simply, we already spend enough money on education to make state universities and colleges free just by reallocating that money from private universities to public universities, first and foremost. And secondly, the value behind providing the education from the state is that this is part of like the GI Bill too, is that they realize that every dollar put into education is $2 on the graduating end back into the economy. So it's a smart investment from a societal point to invest in the education, because you get more money on the back end after they graduate also.
Okay. Chris, thanks for the phone call. Brian, what do you think?
Well, if they graduate, and obviously I think what we've had in this country and in this state has worked. Does it need to be more affordable? Absolutely. But there, again, I think that if it's like, I can't afford a $500,000 home, but I'm going to go buy it anyways. And that's sort of the mentality that, well, I deserve this, I should get this, and versus, no, you have to work for something. You have to have skin in the game. And that's the answer you don't have on this program. How are you going to decide who's going to have the opportunity to take advantage of it, and then what are their responsibilities in return for getting a check by the taxpayers?
So it sounds like you think kind of moral hazard is in play here, that if you made it free, even if you found a way to afford it, whatever mechanism you wanted, you wouldn't like that because it would create a generation of students going to college not feeling the stress of having to perform for the money that they would be paying. Is that true?
I think that's a viable question to ask, yes.
Okay, so it doesn't sound like you'd support it in any form.
Right now, no.
Okay. And a different Chris on Twitter says, he's referring to the fact that earlier Leader Kolb said that you're more concerned with making sure there's appropriate funding leading up to college, K-12. And he says the Assemblyman's Party, the Republicans, gut public education at all levels in New York State, and you can't now say you want to fund primary education over SUNY. What do you say to Chris?
I would say that that's nonsense. The Republicans haven't gutted anything when it comes to education. I voted for, and so have Republicans of both the Assembly and the Senate, have supported education spending for K-12, for our higher ed institutions. I don't know where he's getting his information, but that is absolutely false.
Nick in Cannadice next up. Go ahead, Nick.
Hey, guys.
Hi there.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good afternoon.
Hey, Brian, how
are
you doing?
I'm good.
Great. I just kind of wanted to be one of the first people to say that I basically support the idea of free public education for our young people. Secondly, I'm a taxpayer, so when you talk about why are we having taxpayers write the bill or flip the bill or write the check, I'm a taxpayer, so I support that. Secondly, you spoke about when you went to community college in the Finger Lakes, and you worked and you did what you had to do, and I support that 100%. I'm a working man. I have three teenagers. I have one that goes to MCC and one that goes to Fredonia. And when they're not in college, they're both working more than part-time. And with the money that they make, they are trying to pay down their student loans. They both have to have vehicles to get to and from school, to and from work. So I don't necessarily support the idea that working part-time is going to allow you to save enough money to further your education. Unfortunately, it doesn't work like that anymore.
Just too hard to pay for school these days, you think?
I just want to say I do support the idea of public education for our youth.
Nick, thank you. He's just too hard to pay for school these days. Are the circumstances different, Brian, than when you were growing up that, you know, students are facing something entirely different now?
Well, I think certainly if you looked in today's dollars versus dollars back in 1970, of course it's way more expensive. But that was a long time ago. There's no doubt about that. Having said that, you know, I've served on the Finger Lakes Community College Board. I think I'm very in touch with my constituents and my neighbors, and they talk about the cost of tuition. And today there's a lot of parents that pay the full shot, that where students do not take on their own debt. Certainly, I think, like I said, if there is additional programs, a tuition assistance program, which we have, it's called TAP, we could increase that where it's directly to folks in need. Also, there are scholarship programs at every single college where folks on a lower economic scale have opportunity to get scholarship money from the college itself, getting a tuition cost reduced. So I think, and even providing tax credits, I think there's better ways more diverse ways to approach it rather than just having a handout program.
All right. So I just have to tell our listeners, and I'll be very honest, I'm sort of overwhelmed by the flood of phone calls on this subject. We had planned, and we're going to talk in our second half hour about a field of other subjects related to the state budget. Brian Kolb is the New York State Assembly Minority Leader. And so here's what I can tell you as well. I'll take a couple more quick calls on this, and we've got to talk about other things. Listeners, this is still a very new proposal. You heard Nancy Zimpfer from SUNY say yesterday that they still don't have a lot of answers, but she promises they will have them soon. And once we get more answers, we will revisit this on a future program, because there's still a lot to talk about. And the leader says he doesn't think it's going to pass this year, but we'll see as we get more details. So a couple more quick calls on this, and then we'll talk about some other things. Sharif in Rochester next up. Go ahead, Sharif.
Hi. I would just like to say, as a single father that has a fairly low income, it's tough enough this day and age. Like, we pay taxes for a lot of things that we don't see any benefit for. And it feels like there's very little mobility in our society, like upward mobility. It seems like if you're up, you stay up and get higher. And if you're low, you're just kind of told you're doing something wrong. And I think of this not just as a way to make it easier on kids, but think of the possibility of adults that are working jobs that might be enough to just barely scrape by with the bills as long as there's not an emergency, but there's no upward mobility. If working families could send their kids to school for free, that helps. If they could go to school part-time even while working, like, that would increase a level of mobility in our society that we just don't have right now. If you're working and making $12 an hour,
Sharif,
in your 30s.
Can I jump in, Sharif, and ask you a question?
Yes.
Let me read an email I just got from a listener who has got a different point of view. You can tell me what you think, and we'll have Brian Kolb respond to both of you. Ted writes to the program and says, "The problem with free tuition is that many college grads can't find jobs in New York State. So New York taxpayers subsidize economic benefit to other states when these subsidized students leave the state. The same logic applies to expensive K-12 education. Investments made here leave New York." What do you think of that, Sharif?
I think that it's just more of the same. I think that it's more of, we should keep paying for our municipalities to have fancier buildings and lights on all through the middle of the night and all these things that don't help the people. But then when anybody says, hey, let's spend the people's money to help the people in power tend to just jump up and say, what a waste, our whole system's not designed for that. And it's not, but I think that we need to change it. And when we get an opportunity in one aspect or another to change it, that's when we need to jump on it.
Okay.
Like, this is not free tuition. Everyone's paying tuition already, and we're already paying taxes as well. There's some things that you keep completely private, and there's some things that you turn them into municipalities because they work better if you work socially. We don't have private fire departments for that exact reason, or private police for that exact reason. It's insane to think that if we know that healthcare or education or anything else would work better if we all work together, that we simply don't, because we say it doesn't tie into the rest of the system that's crushing us. It's ridiculous.
Now, let me let Brian Kolb respond. Thanks for the phone call, Sharif. Go ahead, Brian.
Well, I think Sharif raises, a lot of legitimate points. You know, I think it's an aspect of, the state, with our state school system, which I think it's one of the best in the country, if not one of the best globally. And I think that we can help keep tuition costs by making more general investments from the taxpayers to the colleges to reduce the cost or necessity to increase tuition by the college campuses. Certainly, if you look at community colleges, just as that is a starting point, the affordable place to start is that the original concept where the localities were supposed to spend provide a third of the revenues, the state a third of the revenues, and then the tuition, the actual student to obviously come up with the tuition for the other third. New York State has not met, I believe, its obligation historically to provide, so it's a third, a third, a third. And again, that's a different approach to try to get at, to say, okay, I have no problem with New York State enhancing its support for public education. I just want to control it to the standpoint of, we see where the dollars are going directly to the college campuses. It's monitored, and also monitoring the amount of tuition and tuition increases that are made along the way. State has an obligation here. I'm just saying it's a different approach in how we're going to get after it.
John wanted to ask, and John on line one, let me just take this for you because we're trying to squeeze a lot in a short amount of time. He just wants to know what Brian Kolb thinks about a policy where students who received free tuition would have to stay in New York State for 5 years after graduation.
If we were to have a program, there has to be some sort of buy-in by the student to, if you will, either repay or whether it's through time, but certainly have an obligation to give back. And I certainly, if we were to have a program, I want to be clear, I'm not in favor of it, but if we did, yes.
You would want some mechanism like that. Ellen wanted to, from Mendon wanted to know, well, she said, you know, in regards to paying for college, she thinks the minimum wage as currently constructed is not a sustainable wage to help graduates pay for college. Should we have a higher minimum wage, Brian?
Oh, boy. Well, we're already going to have a higher minimum wage. And I guess it's one of these things that we always talk about and debate. Minimum wage never, ever, ever was designed to be a living wage. It was for first entry, young people entering the workforce, people that have no skills, no experience. And it's just obviously an opportunity to begin earning an income and starting a pathway to hopefully a good working career. This concept that minimum wage is supposed to be able, you're supposed to be able to raise a family on a four with minimum wage has never been the design of minimum wage, ever.
And should it be?
No, I don't think it should be, because I think there are, again, there are many other approaches to this particular issue that, you know, we could spend hours debating or talking about the back and forth on it, Evan. But certainly I understand where people are going, but on this concept, but this is why, you know, you still are looking at who are we trying to serve and why are we trying to serve them and what's the best way to try to help them. And that's something that has many components to it that, like I said, we wouldn't have enough time today.
Should there be a minimum wage at all?
Yes, I do believe so, yes.
Okay, but where should it be then? What are you comfortable with? I mean, if you were controlling and setting that wage, and I know, as you said, there are change is coming, whether you want them or not, but where do you think it should be?
Well, the number itself is really, what are you going to predicate it on? You know, we've offered ideas about, okay, for entry-level folks to have a training wage, have the ability for small businesses, for someone that's, let's say, working part-time in high school, and they really come in, they don't know anything about anything in terms of work effort, so let's provide them a lower starting wage that doesn't put an overburden on the business, because it's not just the wage, it's the taxes, payroll taxes, workers' compensation, the costs just ratchet up from there. And what you're seeing, and that's what people sort of forget about, is that the higher you go with minimum wage for entry-level workers, businesses automate, which means eliminate jobs. And that's what's happening, and that's what will continue to happen. Again, I'm just talking about those folks that don't have a higher level of skills or experience that would allow them to secure a job which is much higher paying than what an entry-level job would provide.
All right, I'm late for a break. Let's get our only break of the hour. We'll come back with Brian Kolb, who is the New York State Assembly Minority Leader, and we'll talk about what else is in the governor's budget. There's a lot more than just this tuition plan, and Brian wants to talk about economic development, taxes, and a lot more. So let's hit that on the other side of this break. Coming up in our second hour, perhaps you've heard about the crisis in the Gambia recently. Or maybe you're like me, and until recently, you couldn't have found the Gambia on a map. It's a Western African nation, and there has been a crisis there. The longtime president was defeated but refused to leave. It sparked a crisis in the country, and now it seems to have been resolved, but there are plenty of questions about what comes next and a refugee crisis. Let's talk about it next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. If you're just joining us, it's our chance to speak for the hour with Brian Kolb, who is a Republican, who is the minority leader in the New York State Assembly. Since how long, by the way? How long have you been doing that?
2000.
Since 2000. And Joe Morelli, who is the Democratic Majority Leader, we'll have him on the program soon coming up here. We're talking about the governor's proposed budget spending plan and what Brian thinks perhaps should replace some of the ideas or change or how he feels about some of what has been proposed. So beyond college tuition, what, to you, is the biggest concern you have with what the governor's put forward, Brian?
Well, there's several different concerns, but one of the, when we were talking about the minimum wage earlier, that through the Wage Labor Board, Governor Cuomo's administration, without legislative input or approval, raise the minimum wage for fast food workers. Now, we have direct care workers, those folks that work with a developmentally disabled, home care workers, that are not getting the same, if you will, reciprocal benefit in terms of increasing their pay. And even those that are currently at minimum wage will not see a bump in their pay. Now, for the average listener listening to this, because those folks get paid through the Medicaid system, and there's no way for the providers to increase their pay. It's not private pay. This is done through the federal and state government. And we believe that direct care workers need an increase in funding. The folks that they take care of are our most vulnerable in the state. The governor basically holds their wage increases flat. And to me, it's unconscionable, just like several years ago when the governor proposed cutting the $90 million out of the budget for the developmentally disabled. I say, are you kidding me, really? These are the folks that if you say that government needs to look out and help for, this is our most vulnerable community in the entire state. Thousands of families, thousands of folks that are having a hard time or dealing with a disability, whether it's physical or mental. And yet the governor in this budget, his priorities, he doesn't even really look out for this particular aspect of our society. And these are the folks that have very, very difficult jobs every single day, 24/7. And again, to me, if you talk about budget priorities, you want to spend $163 million, put it to the developmentally disabled community in the state and home care rather than free college tuition.
In your release last night criticizing the governor's budget plan, you put the number at $45 million. Is that right?
Yes.
Is that the number you'd expect?
Yes.
You also, in that release, you said Albany can afford to give Hollywood Studios more than $400 million in tax breaks but can't provide fiscal relief to direct care workers. Is that a fair comparison? Is that apples and apples?
Absolutely, because you're talking about state resources. The governor's proposing a $200 million trail, which may sound great from a tourism perspective, but that is your budget priority versus helping the direct care workers. It's unconscionable to me. It's morally reprehensible that that is even put out there as a budget piece. And I think that's, you know, I'll always fight for those people that need the most support and fighting for them. And certainly the developmentally disabled community is that community in this state that I think the governor is totally ignoring.
The governor in his State of the States talked about the Buffalo Billion and increasing aid to Buffalo and finally answered some questions about why Buffalo kind of got that quote-unquote first billion or however you want to describe it. And he said, well, at the time, you know, Buffalo was in the most need. And I know Rochester would take a little bit of issue with that. But the criticism this time around has come from, why are you investing more in Buffalo when there have been some concerns about potential scandal, potential questions on bids and contractors and who got that kind of funding? Should we rush ahead with more money for it? How do you feel about it?
First and foremost, if you're from Buffalo and if you're a legislator from Buffalo, you're going, woo-wee, we got more money coming, according to the governor. If you live in the rest of the state, it's absolutely wrong. And, you know, why is it that Buffalo, and I love Buffalo, I'm a Bills fan, Sabres fan, I got great friends there. But having said that, every other region in the state has to go through the Hunger Games process, a competitive process to get help for economic development from the state. Why is Buffalo exempt from that process?
Well, let me ask you that question. Why do you think the answer? What's the answer?
Well, it's all politics. You know, the governor's opposition when he first ran was Carl Paladino from Buffalo, and certainly the strong population, second largest population in the state outside of New York City.
You think the governor is worried about Carl Paladino beating him?
Oh, maybe not today, but he was.
Okay.
But he was. But my point being is it's all politics.
Okay.
And this is what drives me crazy. This isn't about a fair assessment of what communities need help. I mean, he goes to Buffalo, I'm going to give you $500 million more. Doesn't even stop in Rochester. Really? Doesn't stop in the Southern Tier? Doesn't go to the North Country? Obviously, he hasn't taken a tour And he makes the major stops in Buffalo, Rochester, Syracuse. He goes to Syracuse because the Onondaga County executive endorsed him. So he funnels money to her and the Onondaga County folks because she's a Republican and he endorsed him. All of a sudden, cachet of cash comes out from the governor. Economic development program is under federal indictment right now in his relationship with people that he directed money to. The Startup New York program is an absolute failure. Now they're in the process of renaming it. There is so much to talk about and review in these programs, and I think it's an insult, personally speaking, that the governor is talking about distributing another $500 million to Buffalo, and he's literally not looking at a comprehensive plan for the entire state.
When it comes to members of the assembly, I haven't checked the rolls near Buffalo. Typically, in more urban settings, you have more Democrats, more Republicans in more rural areas. I'm sure you've got some Republicans in the Buffalo area. Have you instructed your members, listen, don't just get in line to cheer this because it's near you. This is the wrong thing to do.
No, I would never instruct my members to do anything.
Why?
Because each individual member is elected to represent their district. And
But you're saying this is the wrong kind of spending.
Sure,
you're the leader. Why wouldn't you tell them, look, guys, I know it's your district, but this is not the right thing.
Well, because you got to look at the bigger picture here. On any issue in state government that we vote on, not once since I've been Republican leader have I ever asked an assembly Republican to vote a certain way. Nor am I ever say you're not going to be able to speak out, because we have members that speak out all the time. We take different approaches. And the message I always deliver, we elected 7 new members this year. I said, your priority are the people you represent. So if they want to go support $500 million and I disagree with it, we disagree, just like any other issue.
All right. Before I turn it over to the listeners to finish the hour, one more question. You've spoken often on this program and elsewhere about your desire for stronger ethics reform. I know that, you know, we may be moving into that kind of discussion again. It seems to come up every year eventually. Will it come up eventually? Are you satisfied with what you have seen?
Well, the governor put a whole laundry list of things together. I think more along the lines, he's trying to divert attention. You know, his programs are under investigation currently. His best friend has been indicted. One of his other close friends has been indicted. I think this is all about, well, no, it's not me. Governor is one of the biggest micromanagers I've ever seen. And for him to claim ignorance or he didn't know about any of this stuff, Elaine Kelly Arias out in Albany, you've had the Nano collapse in Utica, now Photonica that's not coming to Rochester after the big rollout last March in the city of Rochester. I mean, fundamentally, I don't know how much more evidence that you need that what Governor Cuomo is doing on economic development is fundamentally not the right approach.
Okay, but when it comes, you mentioned Photonica. That's not the only company that's potentially coming to Rochester, and there is still hope that this will be a good investment and that this will be a photonics hub. Do you still have that hope that it will?
I do.
Okay.
But I got to see it. And like I said, why'd you have a big rollout last year if you now, less than a year later, have doubts about it? But you're also seeing companies that are backing off about wanting to come to New York State because all of this is under investigation.
All right, let's work through your phone calls. Teresa in Rochester. Go ahead, Teresa.
Yes, good afternoon. Can you hear me?
We can. Go ahead.
Well, thank you for taking my call. My interest is keenly on climate change, and I'm disappointed that the governor has not done more in this budget on climate change. I'm very interested in the Climate and Community Protection Act that was passed in the Assembly last June, and I know it was blocked in the Senate, and I know that there are several groups that are really trying to get this bill passed in 2017. My main concern is climate change, and I want New York to stand up as a leader in the country, especially with what's happening nationally. Do you have any comments on that?
Thank you, Teresa. Brian?
I think the short version is everyone's concerned about, you know, carbon emissions, whether it's New York State. There's a pact that New York State belongs to. I think that there's been a strong record of environmental protection for our state. But certainly what we're dealing with when you talk about climate change, this is a global issue. It's a federal issue. It's a state issue, and there's not really a simple, easy summation or answer that would probably satisfy Teresa in this particular case, but certainly no one wants to hurt the environment. But I think there always has to be a balance in whatever approach we take.
Okay. You're someone who, you don't challenge the science on climate change then? It's happening?
I haven't spent any time researching it, Evan, so I'm not going to dispute it or agree with it.
No time at all? Come on.
Not.
There's a lot of research out there.
I know.
I'll send you some.
Fine, do that. But my focus has been on economic development for our state.
Okay.
Lowering the cost of that people can survive in this state.
So it's not on your radar right now?
Correct.
Okay. David in Lodi sends a rather strong email challenging the assertion that Republicans don't cut education funding. He says every year it's the Republican Party in the Senate and the Assembly that lobby to reduce the aid to education proposed by the Democrats. And if Brian truly believes he's a strong supporter of public education, I would like for him to tell us what he will be proposing for state aid to schools this year.
Well, first and foremost, I'd like to see, and he can send me an email. I would suggest to have him send me his proof by email or letter that the Assembly Republicans and the Senate Republicans have actually voted against increasing aid to education. I'd like to see the proof because it's not there. But if he has it, I'd like to see it. And certainly education spending is always negotiated predominantly between the two majorities. But if you look at the folks that follow Albany very closely, they'll tell you that I'm definitely a friend of education and always have been.
All right. Randy in Pittsburgh next up. Go ahead, Randy.
Hi, thanks. I just wanted to say kudos to Brian for bringing up the support for the direct care professional to provide services for people with developmental disabilities. I'm the parent of a young woman who lives with developmental disabilities, who lives in a group home. And without the dedicated and caring and sometimes physically and emotionally draining work that those folks do, we would be in serious trouble. And I just hate to see us lose those people to fast food jobs because they need a living wage to support their families. So thank you very much, Brian, for bringing that up. And I hope that the governor hears all of the people, many, many people, who are begging him to remember the direct care professionals when they are talking about increasing minimum wage, and for the state to then provide the funding to the agencies to be able to afford to pay those folks a higher minimum wage.
All right, Randy, thank you. Brian?
Amen.
Not much more you need to add to that, huh? Tim in Bloomfield wants to know, what does Assemblyman Kolb think about Cuomo's tactics to get what he wants passed through the Senate and the Assembly?
Well, first of all, I've never been a big fan of, you're going to do it, I say, or I'm going to do something vindictive to get back at you. Unfortunately, with the New York budget process, the governor has a stronger hand in the budget, which was reaffirmed by the courts. And it's not just Governor Cuomo, it's any governor. So the legislature has limited negotiation leverages when you're dealing with the final budget, except for if you get to that logjam where you say, well, then we're not going to support the governor's budget, and then we're going to, unfortunately, maybe government has to stop working for a day or two, which we don't want to do that. And that's the hard part. And, the governor has not shown a willingness to compromise as much as I think he should. And that's why, we try to educate the public about what's really going on. I don't care what political party the governor belongs to. I really don't. What I care about is the right public policy. So when I speak out about these things, it's from the heart and what I really believe based on my experiences that we could be doing a better job. And I just don't think that the governor uses his ears as much as he should in listening to alternative ideas in terms of public policy.
Down to about our last minute, and so let me just ask you on, Tim brought up the idea of tactics, how to get what you want. The governor has talked about wanting more consolidation of services among municipalities and sort of tying some aid and money to that. And is that an example of something that you think, well, hey, that could lead to more efficiency, smaller government, or do you think you have a problem with that, Brian?
Well, the short version, because we had a short period of time, is that's extortion. With the governor saying, you either do it my way or I'm going to hold back your funding. Well, the largest expense on property taxes, in your county tax bill comes from the mandates from Washington and Albany. Over 70% of your average property tax bill from the counties is due to mandates that the counties and the towns and villages have no way to reduce those costs.
So this is unfair.
This is absolutely unfair, and I think, again, this is part of this shifting the blame game here with the governor. Local governments are not the issue.
All right, and we'll squeeze one more in. Greg says, what about talks to say Finger Lakes Racetrack, Del Lago opens next week, both are in Brian's district, can they coexist?
They can, although it's going to be tough, but we're trying to work out a remedy right now to keep, obviously, the Finger Lakes Racino going, and also, but more as importantly, the racing industry with the horsemen and the breeders.
Do you support any tax dollars going to support the Racino and Finger Lakes Racetrack to keep it open?
I support tax dollars going to the breeders and horsemen because of the industry, economic development.
Assembly Minority Leader Brian Kolb is always generous with his time, takes our questions, is always here. Sometimes he's here when we ask him, and sometimes he says, let me know when you need me, which is nice. I just want to say thank you for that. I know our listeners appreciate it, and I look forward to our next conversation.
My pleasure.
Brian Kolb joining us for the hour. Let's get a short break and much more Connections next.